Coming up, Kevin O'Connor Show after a loaded night of NBA games. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We got a great episode today with Mo Dekeel from Bleacher Report covering what was an awesome night in the NBA on Monday. We had a ton of great games, some games that went down to the wire, some very strange games as well, unexpected performances like Orlando beating the Knicks. No Franz, no Paolo Banchero. Mo and I covered that all. That's coming up next after Father John Misty. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show here with Mo Dekeel from Bleacher Report. Mo, what a Monday night in the NBA. We got a lot to discuss. I want to start off with the Suns and the Sixers, because the Suns, everybody's talking about them because of the Jimmy Butler situation going on around the NBA. But on Monday morning, it was announced that they were moving Yusuf Nurkic and Bradley Beal to the bench. Ryan Dunn and Mason Plumlee went to the starting five. Chris Haynes was first to report that, and it worked. They beat the Sixers. Ryan Dunn locked up Paul George all night. Bradley Beal ate off the bench, led the Suns with 25 points. Don't tell anybody, Philly didn't have Joel Embiid playing. But hey, that's a secret. They didn't have Embiid. But they won 109-99, and the Suns have lost plenty of games this season against teams without their stars, plenty of games that they should have won. I was impressed with how Phoenix's rotation looked. It looked like a step forward for them. At least I know no Embiid, though, so it's hard to assess. But what did you think, Mo?
Let's not poo-poo on it just because they didn't have Embiid. It's, you know, like, because like you said, like, they've been struggling. It's been rough for them. So for them to be able to sort of just get a win, they make a big change. It's a big one. When you're saying not only are you moving two starters to the bench, one of them is Bradley Beal, which is a major piece that you traded for. Like, it's definitely going to make waves and noise with everything that you have. The Nurkic stuff, I think everybody was kind of like, are we ever going to do this sort of scenario?
He's terrible.
It's just, I mean, he's just not what he used to be. It's over and done with him. You know, like, when he got traded to Phoenix, I was like, really? That's what you, I'm not an Ayton guy, but I was like, I'd rather have Ayton at that point. But it's a whole discussion for another time. But they looked good. They looked energized. They looked juiced. They came out. I mean, they did not come out good, right? They started the game and you're sitting there going like, wow, only 16 points in the first quarter. You're like, guys, like, really? Like, if that, you're just like, okay, so we made this big change and that's not working. We're done at that point, but they're able to kind of put it together. They go on a run, they get themselves going. Beal, like you said, comes off the bench and it looks like he's very accepting of the role and jumps in off the bench and ready to go and drops 25 and helps to kind of carry them. It is an interesting and gutsy move from Bud, but like at the same time, if you're Bud, you got nothing to lose at this point. And I was impressed with them the way they kind of, after that first quarter, really kind of continued to play on. I was pretty impressed with everything that we saw them put together.
For sure. And I mean, look, I think for Phoenix, if the Butler deal's there, they still have to make it. There's really no other deal that, in my opinion, gives them any glimmer of hope. Butler's the one guy that they could acquire as an upgrade over Beal. That, you know.
Is there anybody older that they can get? Like, it's just, let's just keep getting old guys and
Sorry, I mean, the truth is what they should do, Mo, is they should go the other way. Trade Booker to Houston for a bunch of firsts. Trade KD, the highest bidder. Reset button. And that's what they should do. That's what they should do. But I don't think Matt Ishbia, their owner, is going to admit defeat with what the path they went down yet. So they're going to go for Jimmy Butler. They're still going to try to do that. Bradley Beal, his situation right now, like, he's coming off the bench. He's got 25 tonight. He's still a 40% shooter from three. He has something to offer teams. He's just way overpaid. So for him, this is almost like an audition to say, hey, I'm not totally worthless. I'm just overpaid to some of these teams.
I'm just slightly worthless. Like, I'm a step above worthless. Like, no, you know,
I'm replaceable. Replaceable is better than worthless.
I guess, right. Like, what's the phrase we want to use?
Well, here's the real phrase. It's placeholder. That's what I believe it is for, say, earlier today on X, I posted a deal saying, hey, maybe the Pistons should be the third team for the Heat and the Suns. And Pistons fans jumped down my throat. They're like, you dumbass, you don't care about us. You just want big market teams to get a star player. You don't care about our future. I'm like, no, like Beal is only 2.5 more years. That's before Ausar Thompson's getting paid. That's before Ron Holland. That's in the middle of Cade's deal. Like 2.5 years is not that long of a time for a guy that, like, you're not far back from the 4 or 5 seed right now in the East.
It's, you know what it is? Here's the thing about the Beal deal. This is why I wouldn't, if I'm a GM of the other teams, I'm not trading for Bradley
no
Beal.
There's no team? Like, is there any team, Mo?
No. I'm just telling you, the reason why is, it's the no trade clause.
Well, what if he agrees to waive that completely for the next deal?
He didn't do it the first time. Like, he doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, he didn't do it when he went from Washington to Phoenix. Like, that's
the situation's changed, though. Like, does he want a lot in Phoenix on it, like, with a team that doesn't want him?
He wants to control where he goes, though. And I think even if he goes to the next place, he doesn't want to give that up and get shipped. That's the only thing. Like, because he, great points. First off, you're right. It's only 2.5 more years left on the deal. It's yes, he's overpaid, but he still can score. He's dropped tonight. He won. Dropped 25 tonight.
You got to pay
somebody.
You're
going to end up in those instances. It's the no trade clause, because then it's like, okay, but we're stuck with him for 2 years. Like, or if he wants to leave, he is going to dictate the terms literally and how he's going to leave. I don't think Miami's going to want Beal back. Listen, they were in the running for Beal the first time when he was being traded from Washington, but he wasn't willing to waive the no trade clause part of his contract. And they were like, all right, well, we don't want him then. And I think that's kind of the stuff I wonder this time around. If you're able to convince him to waive that this time, that's a different story. And I think a lot more teams get interested.
Yeah, I mean, look, I that's a fair point. Maybe if he does waive the no trade clause, there could be more teams, you know. Earlier today, after I posted that about the Pistons, I had a handful of, you know, people in the know and execs and whatnot just saying, hey, like, could there be anything to this? And the feedback I got is probably not. Detroit, it seems like that there wouldn't be interest in Beal. Tom Haverstraw wrote a great piece on his Substack, Tom the Finder, where he connected the dots between the Bartlestein family and the Tellem family, between the Suns and Beal's agent, who is Mark Bartlestein, and there's connections between the Pistons and the Suns and all that, yada, yada. Like, I think that all can help facilitate talks, but it doesn't guarantee interest. Just like if you're in a fantasy basketball league with your friends on Yahoo, just because you're best friends or you're brothers with somebody doesn't mean that you're going to make trades. It might just help communication, but it doesn't mean that there will be a guarantee of a trade. So I think Detroit's interesting for that reason. But what I'm really intrigued by here, though, with the Beal, especially involving, you know, Miami three-way, four-way trade stuff is, you know, is there anybody else? Like, is there anybody else that makes any sense? Because my understanding with Miami is that every offer so far, whether it's from Phoenix or elsewhere, is giving them salary that goes into next season. And that's not what they want. They don't want money entering next season. They'd rather just let Butler walk and have flexibility. So, you know, I've heard that Phoenix and Miami are talking like third, fourth teams involved to try to figure something out. Like, it just feels like so complicated to find anything that can work here, anything.
And it's so hard. When you start adding a third team is very difficult in trade situations. Adding a fourth or a fifth team, then you get into situations too where you just get, okay, you get the Charlie Day at the board trying to, you know, okay, this one's going here, this one's going there, we're sending this money here, and then does it work within the cap? And then you have to sell, you know, four owners on it. Like, it becomes a very difficult thing. Like, I'm not saying it's impossible. We've seen these things done before. We've seen massive trades. It's just so difficult in terms of pulling all of this stuff off and pulling the right levers to making it work. I find it fascinating. And Miami's doing the right thing. They shouldn't take money back in this deal. Their whole thing should be where we're looking at cap space and draft picks. That's really what this team, the thing with Miami is they've been so resistant to bottoming out for so long that they've kind of are in the situation now. We're like, all right, let's bottom out and let's just get as many draft picks as we can. And I don't think they'll bottom out when you have Spoelstra as your coach. You know, I still think he finds a way to get you more wins than you're supposed to have. But I just think it's interesting. With Beal, I mean, there's a lot of teams that I think could find him interesting and use him. It's just comes down to, like I said, the contract. I'm really fascinated to see how this whole thing shakes out. The Butler storyline is going to be nuts. You know, like I have a few teams that I think would be interesting for him, but I don't know if they have any appetite for him.
Who are some of those teams, Mo?
Well, the first team off my mind is Denver.
I'm with you, Mo. I said Denver should go for him trading MPJ, but this was before the recent MPJ explosion.
Yeah, can you depend on the MPJ explosion to go from January to June? Like,
looks pretty awesome. Like, you want to trade him at the peak of this? You're selling high?
I don't know if this is really what you're going to get more of that. Is this going to be one of those things where this guy heard his name in trade rumors, so he plays really well till February 7th after the deadline, and then all of a sudden, goes back to being... You know, and then you're in that tough position. I just think adding him with Jokic and you know, just think about defensively with him and when Aaron Gordon's healthy.
Oh, I know.
Like, that's a pretty tough tandem defensively. Mm-hmm. The level of defensive toughness rises up another notch.
Because Butler can still defend, Mo, right?
Yeah, no, that I'm not worried about with him. And then Jokic will find him. He'll cut, he'll move, Jokic will enjoy playing with him. I obviously have concerns about the shooting aspect of it, especially for that team and with him. I think that's an interesting one. And then the other one that, you know, I'm just going to shout out Sam Vecenie of The Athletic because I wasn't even really thinking of him. The Grizzlies would be a lot of fun.
The Grizzlies have been kind of recently talked about a bit more often with, you know, the Marcus Smart stuff out there, packaging them with Kennard, Conchar. So I think in recent days it's been a bit more out there. But I'm sure like Sam had it out there earlier. And I know Tom Haverstraw and Dan Devine did a podcast as well with Yahoo talking about, you know, hey, maybe the Grizzlies, because like it could be a random team. And now the Grizzlies went from random to... Oh, wait a minute.
We're in the mix.
Could they actually be in the mix here? And, you know, related to the Butler stuff, you know, Gambo in Phoenix, he's like a super reliable Suns radio guy. You know, he might not be a name that you know nationally, but John Gambadoro, he said that on the radio station on Monday morning that the Bucks and Grizzlies are going for Butler. The Bucks are the interesting name there because, like, Milwaukee doesn't have a lot to trade, a lot of flexibility. They blew out the Raptors on Monday night. Chris Middleton was out with ankle tendonitis. They've lost 4 of 6. But the Bucks as a team for Butler is really interesting to me because of the complexity in even trying to get him. Like, you'd have to give up Chris Middleton, a key player, even though he's older, coming off of double ankle surgery, out right now. You'd have to give up Middleton, Portis. They'd have to go to Miami. And you'd have to give up Connaughton to a third team. And so for the Bucks, they're over the second apron. But if they give up enough money and then get Butler back while getting under the second, under the first apron, under the second apron, I'm sorry. It's a lot.
It's a lot of aprons.
If they give up a lot more money than they take in, they're allowed to aggregate salaries. Okay. Now they can swap their first round picks in 26, which is currently going to the Pelicans. They can swap first in 28 and 30 as well, currently going to the Blazers. And they also have their 2031 first. So the Bucks have some future assets to give up. But again, From Miami, like if you're getting Chris Middleton or Bobby Portis, you're getting future salary back. I just don't think that the appeal is there from Miami compared to, you know, what else might be there by early February. I don't know where the rush would be for the Heat other than to say like, hey, like just let's move past this now. But you're not going to sacrifice your future just to save a few weeks.
No, and I also think the Heat are more than willing to just say, all right, well, let's just be uncomfortable all season. Like, I think there's more urgency, Mo,
for the Bucks to get something right with this team. When you still have Giannis playing at a top five level, like the Bucks are a team. That's why they're involved in these conversations. Do you think the Bucks should be going for Butler, though?
Yeah, I mean, I think they should be. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull it off in terms
while
of
giving up Middleton. You'd be willing to do that?
I think at this point, you know, you don't know what you're going to get from Middleton health-wise and things like that. I know how important he is to their offense and the way he kind of sort of helps sort of facilitate things for Dame and Giannis. But with the way Giannis is playing, I think I'd rather just get a guy like Jimmy who, you know, he's going to have nice nights offensively, but you need the defense. Like, just looking at their perimeter defense over the past few games, you know, the skid that they're kind of on right now.
Oh, my God.
They're getting torched on the perimeter.
It's disgusting. It's
Anfernee Simons going off. It's Benedict Mathurin going off. Like, it's on a nightly basis. It's some guard is lighting them up. Now, they might win games, might lose some of these games. Doesn't matter. But, like, they're getting killed on the perimeter, and that's been the question for this team ever since they traded Jrue Holiday. It's like, how do you defend on the perimeter right now? And they don't seem to have an answer. They don't have the guy where I'm like, that's their defender. That's why I would say Jimmy Butler does make sense for them in that scenario where you look at it going like, okay, we could put him in the perimeter and he can try to shut down some of these guys, at least slow them down, for the love of God. Like, you can't keep sort of giving up these points over and over again. I know Dame's going to get you a lot back, but it becomes so difficult, especially come playoff time, to make up for that.
I mean, Dame's going to get you a lot back, but he's not getting you as much back as you thought you were trading for. But, right? I mean, it's just the reality of it. He's a 24, 25 point per game right now guy on lower efficiency than we've seen from him in his peak seasons, including his last year in Portland, because he had that bad season in Portland where he's dealing with the abdomen injury. Then he had his comeback season, his final season in Portland, where it was like career highs in volume and efficiency. The Bucks thought they were trading for that guy. The Heat thought they were going for that guy. And Milwaukee ends up with him, and they, you know, it feels like a big victory, but that's not the Dame you got. It's just not the guy that you got. And so I think that's one reason why you're going after Jimmy Butler, because you need more of that creation, more of that reliability. And Butler adds downhill attacking and defense. Maybe you go small more often with Giannis at the five. But look, dude, I think it's not a coincidence that some of these teams that you hear as like, hey, Jimmy Butler teams, it's these older teams that probably are not going to win it again. It's the Bucks. It's the Suns. It's the Warriors. It's like these older teams where like their time is probably gone.
It's I think of it as a movie, as whoever gets him has to do the movie montage of like one last job, right? Like, it's along those lines of like, all right, we're in it for one more run, because that's basically what you're doing. Because I don't see a young team wanting to do this. Like, Houston was talked about so much early on.
Except for Memphis.
I mean, Memphis to me is kind of quasi-young in that point, where they're at the point where they've been around enough in the playoffs and whatnot where I feel like he could help in that regard. But I don't feel like
maybe he's a rental. He could be a rental too. Like, he could be like their Kawhi, where like go for it for a year or two and then maybe send him off.
But I don't think with Memphis it's the same as it would be for Houston.
Right, like for Houston's way younger,
right? And that's the team that everybody kind of has brought up early on, right? Like, early on, it was, oh man, maybe Houston's going to be the team that's going to, you know, trade for him or whatnot. And I just think, like, the way I look at it is these young teams, I don't want to jump their timeline forward. Memphis to me isn't a team that needs, they don't have to win right now, but they're not a team that if they got Butler, it's really going to sort of jump their timeline. Like, these guys have skipped ahead of them. It'd be right along the line of like, okay, cool. And it could be the placeholder that you were talking about, sort of along those lines of let's let this thing kind of go here for, you know, a year or two, you know, and maybe he opts in and it's more than a rental. It's a year and a half. And then he walks. And then we're in a different position. Like, I don't think you lose much if it's really going to just cost you guys like Smart and Kennard. I mean, it comes down to how much draft equity you have to give up. But, like, that's a team that I think would be interesting. But I think the young teams need to kind of stay away.
Where do you hope he ends up? And where do you think he ends up, Mo?
I just want it to be the most interesting place where we can get the most drama
out of it. To me, that's Phoenix. Like, that's got to be Phoenix, right? I think it's Phoenix because, like, you get KD, Booker, Beal. But then, like, Ryan Dunn's in a really elite rookie defender. Osu Igudoro, he was the best center on the floor for the Suns on Monday night by far. The short roll playmaking creation. I love Osu. I love them out of Marquette. He's been really good for the Suns. I hope he plays more moving forward. But like, they have an interesting mix of old ass guys and young guys, and they already have the drama. They'd be the funnest, I think.
For me, the drama would probably be Milwaukee, because then it's okay. Oh, Jimmy gets to try to terrorize Boston all over again. Like, you can kind of get
that's good. That's
you kind good. Of get that sort of situation, yeah. You know, and Jimmy like gets to have another right? crack. Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's Milwaukee, and there's kind of that good. Rivalry between the two.
So yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah,
that's kind of the thing I'm looking at, where I'm like, and I can see him being. Like amped up to go, you know, and right, because that's the other thing with Jimmy is he's got to be excited about where he goes. Otherwise, you're going to have him, you know, being just crap again.
Yeah, yeah. Milwaukee. I hadn't thought about it from that angle. From Milwaukee, that's a good angle, Mo.
I just think it would be the most fun.
a reminder to listeners: send in your mailbag questions and comments and thoughts to kocshow@yahoosports.com or comment on YouTube, reply on X, DM me on Instagram, hit me up wherever, find me there, and you might get mentioned on the show. All right, Mo, one of the best games on Monday night was the Clippers and the Wolves. Clippers got off to a banger of a start. I thought we were going to be talking about, oh my God, what's going on with the Wolves? And we can still talk about that because they've, you know, had a recent poor skid. But they did. We can still talk about that. But they had a great comeback victory. They won the game 108-106. Anthony Edwards was unbelievable down the stretch. He scored or assisted on the final 15 points for the Minnesota Timberwolves. We can still talk about concerns with Minnesota, because I don't think one game necessarily changes that.
But we can give them a second, though, because besides down the stretch, I thought his third quarter was amazing from Edwards.
Oh, for sure.
And really just goes completely nuts with the way he played in that scenario. And I think
what did you see from him in this third, fourth quarter? Like, is there something sustainable from this? Is there something that he did differently in this second half that you feel like, oh, maybe this could be a good thing for Minnesota moving forward?
I think it just got more to the point of him just going like, all right, I'm taking over. Like, I'm done dicking around. I'm taking over at this point. I'm not going to, you know, all right, let's get everybody involved and things like that. It's my time. This is my team. It's kind of him taking the reins in that sense. I know it's not the what everybody wants is the more technical, like, oh, he did, you know, he dribbled and crossed this way. And da, da, da. No, it was just the attitude, a sense of like, this is my squad now. Like, he came out of halftime going like, we're not losing to these freaking guys. Like, he didn't give a damn.
He made a comment after one of the games over the weekend, or maybe it was last Thursday. I think it was last Thursday. He complained about being double teamed as much as he is. And he's getting blitzed and pick and rolls more than anybody in the NBA. Opponents are trying to take the ball out of his hands and force it into the hands of the roller or somebody else on the floor. It seemed like there's a bit more of a willingness to playmake from him tonight. I don't think this is necessarily just because he racked up 8 assists. It felt like that there is that element as well as part of that takeover mindset. Did you see that as well, Mo?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the playmaking has been something he's been trying to do for most of the season.
He's honest with you. He has no choice when you're getting blitzed as much as he is.
You have to, right? And that's how you adjust to things. The one thing I think I'd like him and the Wolves to kind of work on too, though, is when he gives it up against the blitz, try to find a way to get it right back, you know, and then or attack right off of that, you know, whether it's you know, hitting the short roll and then coming immediately off for a handoff and getting downhill. Like, there's little things that maybe they can kind of work on and tweak with that. But here's the thing. And here's the thing I thought when I read his comments of him complaining about the double team. Yeah. Welcome to stardom in the NBA. Like, that's just the way it is. You know, all these guys, when you're at his level, you're going to get double teamed all the time. Like, we mentioned Dame. I mean, that's what killed him in Portland, that one series against New Orleans. And he spent the entire offseason working on how to learn how to attack double teams. Like, that's the progression that he's going to have to learn if you're Edwards over time. It's more of a, hey, like, the respect. Everybody understands how damn good you are. that they got to get the ball out of your hands. They'd rather the other guys shoot than you. And I think there's a little bit of a respect aspect to it, but he's got to learn how to play with that and how to manage that, and how he's going to have to learn when to be aggressive, when not to be. Like, let me just put it to you this way. First half, 11 shots. Third quarter, 12 shots. He took 12 more shots in the third quarter than he did the first half. Like, you know, there was an aggression there. And I think part of the way you can beat a double team sometimes is just by being the aggressor. And I think we saw some of that in the third quarter, and we saw that down the stretch, and then him just making plays in the right reads. I feel like he's progressing the way you want him to progress, though, as a player.
On the other side of that, with the Clippers, Kawhi Leonard returned over the weekend. This was his second game. He was 3-for-11 in the game, 21 minutes. How have you seen Kawhi Leonard affect the flow of the Clippers? What are your early impressions from him, Mo?
Yeah, it's an interesting one where it's like trying to incorporate a new piece, like such a big piece as Kawhi, can really be disruptive to your team. And I think it's everybody's kind of trying to figure out how to make this work now. How does this kind of play together? I think it's going to be interesting. It's going to take them time. You know, obviously he's on a minutes restriction. He's playing about 20 minutes a game. They're easing him into it and everything, but it's going to take time. I think eventually you'll start to see guys sort of figure it out. The guy that's going to have to make the biggest adjustment is Norman Powell. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the way awesome. he was playing so great, you know, the whole year. Now you bring in Kawhi. Well, okay. Now your touches are going to be fewer. Now you're going to get less shots. Now you're gonna, like, how are you going to handle that? Where are you going to get your opportunities? How are you going to adjust to that? And I think that's going to be the important stuff. Like, that's really, I'm giving the Clippers probably about 2 or 3 weeks before I really want to lock in and see what Kawhi's looking like, because that's when I feel like he'll be, get the rust off him and stuff. And then the team will sort of figure out who they are and how they're supposed to play with him. But those are the guys like Powell, we got to keep an eye on and seeing how they handle the new adjustment. Because Kawhi's not coming in there to just take 6 shots a game, right? He's coming in. He's going to get a lot of shots. He's going to get – Powell had 17 this game. Kawhi had 11. That's probably going to flip over time, you know, and I think, as it should, if the Clippers are going to be really good, Kawhi's got to be their main guy.
I mean, you say as it should, and that's true. Like, Kawhi should be getting, if he's Kawhi Leonard, if he's actually the full Kawhi Leonard that we've seen – yes, he should be getting that many shots, but should it come at the cost of Norman Powell? 24 points per game this season on 17 shots, 44% from three. He's been absolutely tremendous for them. He's been an off-ball guy, an on-ball guy. It's working with Harden on the floor, with you're playing that Harden style, which has been super effective for them, and it's working without Harden too. I'm not convinced that it should come from Norman Powell. If anything, I'm wondering, maybe should it come from James Harden? Harden taking 16 shots per game, shooting below 40% from the field. He's not the same finisher he once was. Maybe Harden leans more towards, even more towards playmaking, dialing down the scoring a little bit, and that goes towards Kawhi. I don't want to see Norman Powell shoot less. I don't.
If I had my druthers, Kevin, that's what we would do, right? Like,
but he's Norman Powell. He's not James Harden. That's what you're saying.
It's James, but like, guess who brings the ball up the court? James. So, like, I think he's going to decide if he's going to take more shots than Norman Powell. Like, I think that's kind of the thing. Like, yeah, I'd want Norman Powell to shoot it more than James Harden. But, like, I just realistically
and
don't see that happening.
Does. And he does this season so far.
Right.
He does.
Right. But when Kawhi starts eating some of the, because yes. Kawhi's going to eat some of James's shots as well, right?
I just hope Kawhi doesn't hurt the flow. I mean, I know the Clippers don't have a top-ranked offense. Kawhi hopefully helps them on that end of the floor. But I just hope it doesn't become a lot of just your turn, my turn. Because I feel like there's still been a flow with Harden, even though it's Harden ball. It's not the same slow, dragging pick and roll after pick and roll pace that the old Rockets teams had. There's a flow and an energy to this Clippers team right now, pre-Kawhi.
I trust Ty Lue to make it so it doesn't end up that way. Like, I think Ty deserves the credit. You know, first off, the fact the team is 20-16.
Oh, man.
You know, with the and Kawhi hadn't played except the last two games.
If the Cavs weren't a juggernaut right now, 30 plus wins and Kenny Atkinson runaway favorite for coach of the year, Ty Lue would probably be a top candidate for that.
No,
award.
No. We have another name. We'll get Mark to that Dagnall in a second. And,
okay,
no,
see,
no, no. Somebody else even. I have even somebody else. But Ty Lue has done such a good job that I trust him to at least find a way to manage this properly.
Who? Willie Green.
I mean, now you're just being mean. Now you're just being mean. No. His team played tonight. My guy's team played tonight.
Okay, I think I know who. Jamal Mosley.
How is it not Jamal Mosley?
Jamal Mosley's a really good one. It's a really good one.
I mean, let me just put it to you this way. Paolo goes out with an oblique tear, and I'm like, oh, man, stick a fork in them.
Season over.
It's going to be a problem. They're going to be a play-in team now. Here we go. Like, all the excitement we had, they were so – and then Franz goes completely ballistic to the point where we're like, oh, Franz could be an all-star. Like, this is amazing. Like, Franz Wagner's really coming up, having a breakout year after the terrible season last year, really stepping up in the absence of Paolo. This is another oblique tear. Which we'll get into the two oblique tears is a whole other story there. But then they're still winning games, Kevin, without these guys. Like, it's just phenomenal. They beat the Knicks tonight, and it's just like I'm just watching it going like, dude, Mosley's just doing a phenomenal job. I know Atkinson, runaway favorite, and probably Dagnall number two. But my coach of the year is Jamal Mosley, because those teams wouldn't be so good if they were down both their stars.
Mosley is deserving for sure. I mean, you look at Orlando this year, you said it. They were 3-2 to start the season with Ben Caro and with Franz Wagner. They were 4th in defensive rating over that time, 16th in offensive rating. Then Ben Caro goes down. They're 13-7 with just Franz Wagner. They're 2nd in defensive rating during the stretch, 25th in offensive rating. Then Franz goes down. They're 6-7. 6-7 is unbelievable. I mean, without their two best players.
They should be 3-whatever the number is after that. Like, it's like, how?
I know. It's because of their defense. 4th in defensive rating without Franz Wagner, without Paolo Banchero, 29th in offensive rating. But their elite defense, it hasn't mattered. The lineup, it has not mattered. Their defense has remained elite. And I know the Knicks, like, they didn't have Kat tonight, so obviously that makes them a lot easier to defend. But still, you're holding an NBA offense to only a 94 points.
Oh, the Knicks. They didn't have their one star. They lost to the team that doesn't have any of their stars. Like, oh, the poor Knicks. Oh, you know, yeah, we give them a pat. Like, come on. Like, this Orlando team, this is something else. It's really exciting to watch with what they have and what Mosley has done in terms of just everything, you know. And it's not just that their defense is so good in a league that is so built on offense and is so, like, you got to have a good offense to really compete. For them to go all the way to the other side and be, nah, we're just going to have the best defense. You guys ain't going to score ever on us, and we'll just score 5 points and win the game. Like, it's that's the kind of thing. I mean, not even to mention they lost this game. They win this game. They didn't even have Jalen Suggs.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, missing a lot of key guys. And it doesn't matter.
It's just impressive.
I mean, they got Caleb Houston starting tonight, a young guy. You know, they got Jet Howard playing minutes, Trevelyan Queen coming off the bench. They got, like, just a bunch.
You,
like,
came off the bench, Kevin. He turned you into a lockdown defender.
I did. I teleported here after the game tonight, all the way from MSG in New York. Tristan Da Silva's been great for them. Talked about him a little bit on the podcast last week. But I'm curious, like, you talk about their defense. What are the qualities about this Magic defense that's made it elite?
I mean, one, the most important thing, and this is the hardest thing, I think, to get on any team, is just the complete buyout or a buy-in, excuse me, from all the players in terms of defensively where they're going to be. It's completely understanding your rotations to the point where it's like, all right, I got to make this rotation. Like, the things that defensive breakdowns happen all the time where it's one person doesn't make the rotation they're supposed to make. And that doesn't happen with Orlando.
they rotate, and then the guy behind them rotates, and the guy behind them rotates, and the guy behind them rotates. Okay, the ball moves here. Cool. Then this guy rotates, and the guy behind him rotates. They are constantly moving in terms of the rotation. Now, the other aspect, too, is they got some damn good defenders. Like, Jonathan Isaac, I mean, like, he doesn't play the minutes. So we wish he could. But that's a type of defensive player of the year type of guy in terms of what they have defensively. You know, KCP, older, not quite the defender he used to be, but still solid. You have dogs just across the board with Cole Anthony, you know, with the way he defends. Suggs, when he's healthy, is all over you. Paolo locks in defensively. Wagner locks in defensively. Mo Wagner, also another guy injured, you know, is a guy that's going to bring it defensively. They bring the juice defensively night in and night out, and they understand what their job is on that side of the court. Whereas you have a lot of guys who, by the way, like, the players want to make the right rotation. They just don't know that it's the instinct or whatever that draws them to the ball or puts them in the wrong spot, or they did this and this guy cut and put them in a bad situation. Like, they are just constantly rotating in a way where I'm just like, damn. Like, this is a well-coached team because this has been drilled into them every – if I had to guess, they do 25 minutes of shell drill every day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like you nailed it, Mo. They're a connected team, a prepared team, and the personnel that the front office added, it's pretty clearly like they have a type with what they've gone for.
They have a type.
They definitely have a type. They certainly – I mean, even Tristan Da Silva fits the Franz Wagner, Paolo Banchero, big 6'8", 6'9", versatile defender who can also handle the ball and play make a bit for you on offense. I can't wait to see the way Orlando works, looks when Paolo comes back. And the good thing for them is they've been so competitive without Paolo, with Franz, and then without both Franz and Banchero, they've just managed to still – hold their seating. And so, like, they can, like, this week Banchero has moved from out with the oblique to out with, you know, returning competition reconditioning. That's the the phrasing they used. He's gonna come back very soon, and that's gonna be a boost to their offense. And then eventually Franz is gonna come back from that oblique injury. That's gonna be even a further boost to their offense. They're going to be a tough out come playoff time. They're going to get a ton of experience, but I just can't wait to see both those guys on the floor for longer than five games together once it comes time, man, because the sky really is the limit for this team. They're one of the true bright future franchises in the NBA, and they're already damn good as is.
Yeah, and this is just one of those things, like, this is – we always talk about teams, like, facing adversity. They've faced adversity several times over this season and have answered the call each time. So, like, come playoff time,
says a lot
like,
about the mental aspect of the guys in that locker room and the coaching
staff. Yeah, like, it's really, you know, everybody always says the cliche, next man up. Like, it's always, especially in the NBA, there's only 12 guys, 15 guys on the team. Next man up. Eventually, you run out of guys. for them, they're just, they genuinely embody it in a way where it's actually paying off. Like, it's an amazing story. And again, if it wasn't for Kenny Atkinson having the season that he's having, he's been a phenomenal job. Mark Daigneault, phenomenal job. Like, Jamal Mosley should be a dude that, you know, to me, would get coach of the year. If I had a vote, I would just give it to him now. But, you know, I don't, and I'm not allowed to, and they're smart to not give me one.
Trust me, you should get a vote, Mo. You deserve a vote.
They're smart not to give it to me.
Maybe they should. Speaking about coaches, did Doug Christie save the Kings?
No. Five games. Maybe six. It'll be six after tonight. It'll be
six after tonight. We're currently recording this while the Kings are up 50-47 at halftime against the Miami Heat. So they're 4-1 so far with Doug Christie. We'll see how the game results. Of course, no Jimmy Butler from Miami. Also no De'Aaron Fox for the Sacramento Kings. I'm happy that Christie has unleashed, like, you know, Keon Ellis. For whatever reason, Mike Brown had something against playing Keon Ellis heavy man. Like, that was the biggest fault I had with Mike Brown. Like, you're a team that needs defensive help, especially on the perimeter. Hello, Keon Ellis. Feels like Doug Christie has just simply played him. That's one of the big differences.
Yeah, no, I mean, the two things I've seen the most besides the Keon Ellis stuff, just sort of like schemes or schematically or game planning from them that I think Christie's done that Mike didn't do. And I think Doug's done a good job. Like me saying no isn't a shot at Doug Christie, by the way. It wasn't.
Of course.
Like, it's just a few games in, like this stuff, kind of honeymoon sort of scenario with that. But one, he has them taking more threes. You know, before, you know, when Mike Brown was there, they were 24th in 3-point attempts a game. This, you know, since Christie's taken over, they're about 12th. So, like, obviously, it's gone up about 4 or 5 more threes a game. That obviously helps a ton for them. And the other thing is they are playing way faster. They are playing at kind of what I sort of look at as Sacramento Kings basketball, but they are playing. Their pace is, it's like 101 right now under Christie, and I think it was at 99.3 or something under Mike Brown. And I know those numbers sound like, oh, it's not really a big deal. It's a big deal. The pace is much faster. You can feel them flying up and down the court much more deliberately trying to get into transition and things like that. So for me, I think that's those are the areas I looked at with Doug that I felt like, okay, he's done a good job. Like, he's really, you know, in the situation he's in, he's done a pretty good job sort of getting them going. These are the things we want, and they're executing it. And that's going a long way for them.
Couple other newsy things. Zion, close to returning to action, played 5-on-5 this week. Willie Green says there's a chance that he'll be back soon. Hasn't played since November 6th, of course. This is a complete disaster season for the Pelicans. They're 7-29. No chance at all for even making the play-in. But, I mean, hey, like, it's something. It's nice that we might actually get to see Zion play basketball.
Let me throw this at you, Kevin. I'm going to throw this way from left field, and this is unfair of me, but, you know, I'm a jerk, so that's just the way it goes. Say Zion comes back, and he looks good. Not great or anything, but he looks good. He looks like Zion. We're like, wow, okay, like this net. He looks healthy. We're happy with where he is.
Better than he did early in the season.
Yeah. Like, we're like, okay, Zion, this is the Zion. Yeah. We mm-hmm. not the Zion we thought everybody was drafting and everybody was going nuts about. But would you consider trading him?
Oh, without a doubt. I'm considering trading him even if he looks spectacular.
Well, okay. So that's yeah, kind of like, yeah, because like where you're at with New Orleans, it's just kind of like, all right, look, we try. This is just not working. It's just not working anymore.
God, God, if he looks spectacular, I am more willing to trade him.
For Jimmy Butler? That's a joke. That was a joke. If you're listening on the podcast, I had a devilish smile on my face when I made that joke. It was a joke.
I mean, I just don't think you can trust him. But the thing is, here's the issue for New Orleans. Even if he looks good, right? Let's just say he only looks good. Yeah, he looks good. Not even peak Zion, but good. I don't think you're getting a return that makes it worth trading him. But if he looks spectacular and a team's like, you know what, screw it. We'll roll the dice this year and try to go for it and hope he's healthy for one run. Bill Walton style, right? Like, where he's all had all these injuries, but this will be the year. Hopefully he's able to stay healthy and we'll just go for it. And who knows? Maybe Zion has a historic run and that's what he goes down as 40 years from now. He, like,
who knows? Golden State Warrior legend.
Can you imagine a Steph Curry, Zion Williamson, two-man game? Zion, the short roll. Draymond, now a near 40% shooter, spacing the floor on the wing. It's the truth. I'm telling you.
Steph to Zion to Draymond.
I mean, I say that not sarcastically at all. Draymond this year, 38% from three. Last year, 39.5% from three. I'm just saying. I'm not kidding.
You know, he's been way better. You can't argue. He's knocking him down the past 2 years. Like, he's hitting his shots. Like,
something's a little different. Him and LeBron might have been training together. LeBron having the best 3-point shooting seasons of his career. Draymond as well. Maybe they were in the gym together.
I wonder what they'd be drinking at Clutch.
but Zion, it is an interesting scenario here because this is kind of a time for teams to feature players. Like, you have the Rockets sending Reed Sheppard to the G League as well, maybe featuring him, saying, hey, maybe he has high value for you, because I don't think they're going to be trading Jalen Green anytime soon, maybe in the summer once he's eligible to be moved. But I don't I don't know if they're going to do that. I think they might want to keep Jalen Green. He's played great as of late. You're not trading Amen Thompson. There's a glut of guards and wings that are going to be taking minutes from a Reed Sheppard. Granted, you took Reed Sheppard very high in the draft at number three. Maybe you feature him in the G League. And if not, like, you're getting him minutes, which he absolutely deserves. But, you know, that's what we saw the Warriors do with Kuminga, who's sidelined right now. You're featuring these guys. And so for the Pelicans, getting Zion back now, and at least, hey, like, you have a month to show both your own franchise, the Pelicans, but also all 29 other franchises, hey, here's what he can do. You know, do you want to take a shot and roll the dice on this guy who's shown he can average almost 30 points per game and playmake? Maybe.
I think they really have to, at this point, try to hope that he looks good enough that they can get something. And even if it's just an okay package, like, honestly, I just think it's over. Like, it, for them there with him, it's kind of over in my view. I know it sucks. It's frustrating, but I think this was the deal there. Is you just look at it, and I think it's not going to work, man. I just, as much fun as it was when that playing game where he was going before he got hurt was so much fun.
Before he got hurt.
Right, exactly. And that's the problem. Yeah. Before he got hurt is such a regular thing with him at this point. I just think he needs a change of scenery. And I think New Orleans needs to move on from him.
Yeah. I mean, the tough thing is like, who's the team? Like, Golden State, you know, trade Wiggins, but then you're trading your best perimeter defender. Like, people talked about Dallas for Butler, and I'm like, with what money? Like, with what salaries?
Yeah.
I just don't know, like, what the team is for him that makes complete and total sense. And Dallas, I mean, like, they're in a situation now where they're without Kyrie for a week to 2 weeks. He has a bulging disc in his back. Gotta make sure to say those two words very clearly: bulging disc in his back. Luka out probably until late February. Dallas loses again to Memphis tonight, 104. They score. Memphis holds them to. Memphis wins that game by 15 points. We don't need to get into that necessarily, but Dallas is in a situation where they're probably going to slide down the standings at this point. You know, you have Memphis up at 3, Denver up at 4, LA at 3, Dallas now currently at 6, tied with the Clippers. They're only 3 up on the Kings for that 11 spot. So Dallas could go sliding here with or without Kyrie, and especially without Kyrie.
It's a scary time for them right now. Like, this is one of those things where you're looking at it going like, all right, we were betting on our two main guys, and our two main guys are out. Like, this is the situation you're in when you depend on just two. And this is something that happens to the Lakers from time to time with AD and LeBron. You know, the Warriors are depending on one, just Steph. It's a challenging situation. Like, I don't have anything to say about Dallas, just in the pure fact of, like, I hope they find a way to stay in it, at least the play-in. And because I want to see Luka come in, you know, it's playoffs are fun with Luka. And I think it's going to be an interesting scenario for them. They still have their draft pick, right? Is that going trades? I'm so confused now with so many trades.
Dallas does have their 2025 first.
So, I mean, you know, it's, you don't want them to step out of the playoffs or anything like that. For them, it's kind of a decent consolation if they do. They at least have probably happened
2 years ago, and they get Lively.
And it worked out great for them, right? Yeah. And then they go to the finals, you know, just last year. So it's along those lines. But this is a scary time for them. If you're Dallas, this is nerve-wracking. And again, you said it. I don't know how they get Jimmy. Right. I know they've been mentioned, but I don't know how they get involved in the Jimmy Butler sweepstakes.
They're not getting
there's
Jimmy
just Butler. No way. Not right. Happening. So there's no, you know, and it's not, they're just in that. This is the team. They were locked into this team. I think it'll be interesting to see how they kind of manage it. This is the time right now. If Jason Kidd's a great coach, this is one of those things. He's got to find a way to get them 500. He's got to pull off the Mosley.
I mean, look, this is the Western Conference, man, right? Like, it's like every game is going to matter for that seeding. It is seriously a beast. Houston, the 2 seed, they are 7 back from Oklahoma City, only 6.5 up on the Suns at the 12 spot. So there's 6.5 games of separation, less than there is between the 2 seed and the 1 seed. And so if you even condense it even more, the 4 seed Nuggets and the 12 seed Suns, only 4 games of separation. So for these teams with players missing time or dropping games that they should win tonight, the Spurs blow a game to the Bulls. They had a lead in the game. They end up losing by 4 points, outscored 32-15 in the fourth quarter. Like, if you're a team like the Spurs and you have aspirations of moving up and getting a guaranteed playoff spot, these are the games you can't be dropping. You can't lose these games.
Cannot lose. Listen, this game, the second game that the second night of the back-to-back that they lost to Denver, they had double-digit leads that they blew. You cannot lose these games.
What happens like to their offense in these moments? It skids so often, it seems. What are you seeing?
I part of it too is like, I love Wemby. This part, I'm going to ding him a little bit. Some of it is the shot selection from Wemby, and the game's clutch time is a bit too 3-point heavy. I think I want to see him roll a little bit more in the last 3 minutes and popping as much as he does. He took a three. That wasn't a bad three. It wasn't like,
do you blame
okay,
him for that? Or is that sometimes philosophy? Like, should they be posting him more often, or is that more his choices, you think?
The pick and pop, I think, is his choices. I think that's his choices. And I felt like they got really stagnant in this game. It really turned into just Chris Paul, Victor Wembanyama, 1-5 pick and roll, and we'll figure it out from there. I felt like they could have gotten into a little bit more motion-y on offense and include some of Vassell's really good for them. I think he can make plays for them a little bit off the bounce. You know, I think there are opportunities that they could have used some of the other guys there that they have. I think they get kind of stuck in the forcing it into Wemby. He's our star. Let's force it into Wemby and get going from there. And I think they got to kind of just, let's just run a little bit of just regular, some of our sets that we have that I know, you know, Mitch Johnson has gotten from Pop. And that's, by the way, another young guy who's done a great job in a crazy situation to step in the way he has done a good job with this team. But I think they need to figure out their clutch offense a little bit more cleaner. And I think they need to start kind of identifying a bit more, what are the shots we want at the end of games?
Take a quick break. Then when we come back, I want to give the Bulls some props. All right, Mo. I mean, dude, the Kobe White finish at the end and the dunk over Wemby, just absolutely sensational. I mean, to have that courage to challenge Victor in that moment, like, Victor almost looked disappointed in himself not to rotate a beat quicker because he was a bit slow to recognize White on that drive. But the second dunk of the season for Kobe White, woo, one of the best of the year. I look forward to seeing how that ranks on the NBA.com dunk score to see how that grades out. Unbelievable.
Don't dunk again. If you're Kobe White, retire from dunking forever. Doesn't get better than that. Game-winning flush on Wemby. Like, come on, man. Like, it doesn't get better than that. I know they had the lead, but it sort of sealed it and put them up three. I just don't dunk again, man. But, like, this was actually a really fun game. But, this is one of those games where it's like the Bulls, like, you guys frustrate me so much because you look at it on paper, like, you guys should be this good. You guys should be better than your record. You guys got some talent. You shouldn't be 17-19, which is what they improved to with this win. But it's just like, at the same time, I'm like, but we also know you're going absolutely nowhere. Like, you're just, as an organization, as a team. So it's kind of frustrating where it's like, yeah, I could see where this team is pretty good. You know, Vooch had a hell of a night, except from struggles from three, although hit a huge one down the stretch. You know, Levine's been really good. You know, Lonzo came in off the bench and made it really difficult defensively, then hit a big pull-up three.
Lonzo, in transition. So freaking fun. Hustle plays. I mean, his brother's releasing banger, you know, viral songs, and Lonzo's back. LaMelo's innovating from 3-point range with his step back. I mean, what a family.
Yeah.
LaMelo did something right.
They should get some shoes together.
I should have worn my Big Baller Brand shirt tonight. I do have one, by the way.
Oh, I did not know you had one. You're probably one of the four people that got it actually shipped out to them.
I have never worn it.
Yeah.
I bought it for a day or it's going to make sense to wear it. Someday on this podcast, you'll see me in a
maybe,
big ball
maybe
of
one day you'll be able to rock it.
Maybe when the Hornets make the playoffs.
Oh, then you won't ever be wearing that. The thing about the Bulls, though, is just like, this was a really nice comeback win for them. It's one where you feel like you could build upon. Like, look, I like their coach. I like what they do. Everything that they have. It's just, they're just so frustrating because it doesn't feel like they can ever sustain something long and can be more than just, okay, cool, we're just playing fodder.
Well, this is playing fodder, also just trade machine bait. Like this is what they are. Like people talk about these guys as a team to pluck something from. Everybody talks about Zach LaVine, who, by the way, similar to Jimmy Butler and similar to Bradley Beal, just this huge salary that makes it tough to trade him. But LaVine's been awesome, and he could help a lot of teams out there. I still like LaVine for the Lakers. I know it is such a cliche match to have LaVine going to the Lakers. Everybody mentions LaVine there, but like he'd add a lot. That AD LaVine pick and roll two-man game would be really beautiful to watch. But Vooch has been really good offensively this year for Chicago. He's still one of the worst defensive bigs in the league, but offensively, he's shooting over 40% from three. He can play make, he can attack, he can post up. Vooch can offer a lot. And if you're pairing him with a great defensive four, maybe you can make something work. Like maybe you put him, you know, next to a Draymond or next to a AD. Is there something for Vooch out there on a contender?
It's so hard because here's the thing. If you're contending, you probably need a defensive center.
I know.
Like I know. That's the thing that makes it so hard where a contender is going to trade for him. You know, and that's the scenario you run into. If you're in the East, you're going to have to figure out how you're going to defend guys like Kristaps Porzingis. You know, how are you going to defend Evan Mobley and Jared Allen? You know, like these are the questions that you're going to start trying. Carl Anthony Towns, you know, these are the questions you have to start figuring out. And you know, you go, okay, we need a defensive big. And it's just like, as much as we love the offense that he gives us, the spacing he gives us, you know, his ability to shoot and score and rebound, and he rebounds really well, but it's just like, we can't, in the playoffs, it comes down to just a few possessions, and we can't have a defensive, an offensive big that can't get us stops. And I think that really is the challenge for them. And I think, you know, that's what makes it so hard for me to just feel like a contender can do that. And the price is going to be so high to get him. It's not like this is just, okay, well, you didn't give up much to get him. That's a different story. I feel like you're going to have to give up a lot to get him. And I think that just puts you in a very difficult position as a team.
The Celtics and Nuggets play on Tuesday, Mo. I'm fired up for this game. Nuggets quietly 2.5 back from the 2 seed. You got Russell Westbrook fitting in well. MPJ on fire. Jokic having another MVP caliber season. And the Celtics over this last month, it's interesting. Since December 7th, the Celtics are third in offensive rating, second in defensive rating, third in net rating, one of only three teams with a net rating over 10 since December 7th, the Cavs, the Thunder, and the Celtics. But they're 7-6 over this month. They're 19th in three-point percentage. It's really weird, and they have had losses to the Bulls. Of course, lost to the Sixers on Christmas. They lost to the Pacers. Lost to the Thunder on Sunday, 105-92, and they were held to just 27 points in the second half. So statistically, with the advanced stats, they're still awesome. But they're 7-6 over this last month, and it's just felt like, to me, it's a team that is just bored. They've been poor in past Decembers as well. Last year, they weren't great in December. Years prior, they weren't great in December. Just feels like a team that's just like, all right, we're coasting a bit now. But, you know, 19th and three-point percentage, you could argue tired legs. Are you at all concerned with the Celtics? Is there anything that you're seeing from them that has, you know, alarm bells going off for you?
I don't want to say alarm bells or concern. Like, it's not – there's still a team, I think, that – I think bored is the right way to put it with them. But there are things I wish they did things. Like that game against Oklahoma City, which was an awesome game, really showed something in the sense of they had 34 points in the paint in the first half. Do you know how many they had in the second half?
I mean, they scored 27 points in the second half, so
Yeah, so they definitely didn't have 34 yet.
I'm going to say like 8.
No, close. 6.
Wow.
And they had 0 in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
0 points in the paint. I was so concerned I was getting that stat wrong that I went back and rewatched to make sure, like, because I was looking at the stats, can't be right. No, there had to have been a bucket in the paint somewhere in the fourth quarter. 0. Wow. And my thing that concerns me with them is, okay, when you're not shooting the three ball well and the defense has done a great job defensively on you, what are you calling to get yourself an easy bucket? And Mazzulla didn't call anything. And it's like, do you have a package of, hey, let's run something and get us an easy bucket? Let's get us a Porzingis, a look right in front of the rim. Maybe he misses it, but my job as a coach is to put you in these positions. You know, do you have something that gets it so that Tatum's in a coming off of a screen and should have a lob? Is there anything like, because like so much of their offense is kind of flow. You know, let's see what we get. And it's working. I'm not trying to say anything bad about their offense or anything like that, or I don't mind it with this stuff, but it's like, when you're in a situation where things aren't working, like, do you have something in your back pocket? You know, in football, they always have, coach has a play for a specific third and two situation or whatnot, or the 2-point conversion they have. These are, like, you have something like that. That's what worries me a little bit with Boston, because I don't feel like they do. And that game was so eye-opening in that. And I actually did a little video, it was more on OKC's defense that I just posted, about that. You know, when the defense ramped up.
Where can people find that video?
They can find it on Instagram, on TikTok. It'll be up on Twitter and Blue Sky shortly on my YouTube page. Wherever I have a social, I'm probably posting basketball stuff, people. So that's, you know, you'll see it there with all that. But it's interesting in that, like, when I was watching all of these things, I was like, man, like, call a timeout. Let me run something where I'm going to get a lob for one of my guys. That's what concerns me.
As you're talking about like that Thunder defense and the Celtics not having some plays drawn up, one play that does come to mind for Boston was opening of the fourth quarter. They called a play for Kristaps Porzingis, and Derek White set this amazing screen for KP to spring him loose a little bit, but okay, switch the screen. Jalen Williams switches on to KP, and then KP spins right into Isaiah Hartenstein, who is perfectly in position, blocks the shot. There's two layers of help, and it was just one of those instances where I'm watching and I'm like, OKC knows everything that's coming. OKC's defense in that game against Boston was, I thought, the best defensive performance of any team this entire season. They have the best defense in the NBA, even without Chet Holmgren, even without Alex Caruso. Like, Boston could not beat them off the dribble at all. And they, like, OKC was in front of guys when they were cutting off ball as well. It was truly like a magnificent defensive performance. It was.
But only in the second half. In the first half, I felt like they were getting cooked. Mm-hmm. They were jumping around too much. They were too eager to stop them from shooting threes. They kept biting on pump fakes from three, and driving lanes were open for Brown, for White, for everybody. But in the second half, whatever adjustment Dagnall made, again, coach of the year type stuff, it worked. Because these guys, the Celtics felt them physically in the second half. They did not in the first half. They were in their bodies the whole way. And like you said, as soon as you beat one of them, you had a second layer behind that. And if you beat the second layer, there was a third layer coming over. So that was the difference with them. And that's what, you know, that's your most impressive defensive performance of the year. Mine are all OKCs. What they did to Dallas in the play-in NBA Cup game, where they just completely locked up Luka. Like, it's all of these stuff. Like, they have the goods defensively. Like, it's they're such a brutal team to play. And that's where I think, like, yo, Mazzulla, help your guys out. Run something that'll make it a little bit easier.
That's fair. And I mean, I think the difficult aspect for Boston is, like, even when you have Jaylen Brown, there's a play late in the fourth quarter where he's got the ball on the right wing and he's ISOing against the eighth man on the Thunder, Kenrich Williams. But Kenrich Williams just completely locks him up. Brown fumbles the ball. goes the other way. Wallace scores in transition, but it's like even the eighth guy in minutes on OKC is a really good, long-armed, tough, smart defensive player. Like they have just loaded.
What's scary is that's really the 10th guy when they're healthy.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's what's scary. And that's the thing about this team where you're just like, damn, okay. Like, what is the ceiling with OKC?
I mean, the ceiling is championship, and then after that is dynasty. That's truly what it is. I mean, I think for Oklahoma City, the true threat long-term is really just Victor and the Spurs. What do the Spurs build around Victor Wembanyama? Are the Spurs able to have anywhere near as much success building around Wembanyama as the Thunder have been building around SGA? That remains to be seen. It just does for the Spurs. They need to add a lot. They have Chris Paul as the point guard right now. That's not going to cut it long-term. They have a lot they need to figure out.
It takes time, though, for them, yes, right? Like, let's just look at it this way. Like, with
it took behind OKC
4 years. Yep. 4 years before they really figured it out with, you know, the right pieces and that stuff. Like, but I think it's interesting because I would love for that to be the San Antonio OKC rivalry. Would be a lot of fun just to kind of have that Victor Chet Shea sort
we
of
need
rivalry
him to face
stuff
off in the first round. That's what we need. The NBA needs the Thunder 1 seed to face the Spurs 8 seed in the playoffs in the first
round.
We're
right in the mix. It's actually probably likely to right now the way it's set up, they would be the 10th seed of the play-in tournament. We would need them to win both those games, and then we get it set up. All right, call the commission. Let's just make it happen.
We need that. the Chet-Victor rivalry is already brewing. We need those teams to face off come April in the first round. It would be amazing. Coming out party for Wemby on the starting San Antonio side. Could be the start of a finals journey for OKC. Could be on Wednesday night a preview of a potential finals matchup between the Cavaliers and the Thunder. Two teams that have won over 30 games so far this season. Cleveland is 31-4 on a 73-win pace. The Thunder are 30-5, leading the Western Conference by 7 games right now. I'm fired up for this game. Mo, I have a question for you, though. Who's been more impressive this season, OKC's defense or Cleveland's offense? Both number one ranked.
I'm going to say Cleveland's offense, but that's more maybe a problem, more of just I wasn't expecting that.
Yes, right. Like, a lot of people were expecting OKC to have a top defense, but Cleveland, whoa, what?
You're just looking around with what? This really? Like how? Okay, you know,
I thought it didn't fit.
Yeah, you just kind of like okay, all right, that's how that works. So you just kind of look at it going like, all right, fair enough with that. But it's not, and that's not to take away from OKC, but it's just the way Cleveland has come out the gates offensively. And also I felt like, okay, after their 15-0 start or whatever, like, okay, they'll come down to earth. Man, they're still in the moon. They're out. Like, it's gone.
Like,
it's
10 in a row, Mo.
I know. it's so impressive.
For Oklahoma City, but minus the loss of the play-in.
That's fine, but it doesn't
matter. Yeah, of course, yes.
Yeah, but still, okay, well, 15-1 is still pretty good, too.
Of course.
You know, like, it's along those lines where you watch this stuff and you just – what Kenny Atkinson has been able to do with this team offensively, and I think the most important thing he's done is he's actually unleashed Evan Mobley. You know, I mean, Garland's healthy, so he was so much better than what he showed last year. You could see him being healthier. Donovan Mitchell. Damn good, right? Like, that's a dude. But, like, Mobley is really kind of stepping into his own. More of a playmaker. More, you know, using him as a facilitator. But he's willing to shoot the three ball now. He's shooting, I think, about 40%. I might be wrong a little bit. But just under 3 attempts a game. You know, like, this is a guy I look at. Like, he should be an all-star this season. This is what you're getting from Mobley is really unlocked everything for the Cavs. And I think that's what's unlocked their offense. And I think that's what makes this team so interesting. And you got to give a ton of credit to Kenny.
Now, Mo, I'm curious. You obviously spent time working in the NBA. You were a video coordinator. These teams entering Wednesday night's game, they last played on Sunday. So they have 2 full days off to prepare and think about their upcoming opponent. And your time working in the NBA, what's the difference for teams when it comes to in the middle of the regular season with having those days off preparing for a single game? Is there a greater focus a lot of the time when you have that time to repair versus the typical flow of back-to-backs and one day off, but you're flying and all that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, for sure. Just first off, just your bodies or one day extra rest is so important, you know, in terms of what it does to your body and the freshness that you have physically. But I think as a coaching staff and strategy wise, you get to spend a little more time watching the film, a little extra, you know, like when you're working on a scout as a coach, you are going, you know, from game to game to game. Like, you know, the way it works in the NBA, and this, I apologize, this might be a bit long-winded, but, you know, a lot of times, a lot of teams set it up where like, all right, this coach has these seven teams. Those, anytime we play them, that's your scout. You got to have the report on them. You got to be ready to roll. Boom. You know, this coach has these seven, so on. So everybody's assigned teams, you know, and every team does it differently, but this has been my experience. And so when you're the coach that's been assigned to you, you have that extra day. Okay, you're going to have everything. You're going to make sure you have every stat looked at. You're going to make sure you've seen all their ATOs, all their end of games. You're going to make sure you're on top of what they've done over the last five games. You're going to be really kind of a little bit more locked in just because you have that extra time, that extra ability to sit down and stay with this. Whereas during the regular season, same thing, but it's like a back-to-back. And if, God forbid, you have both of them, you know, like you're working simultaneously on both scouts, but really you're working on the one coming up first and then focusing on the next one. It's challenging, or just even a day in between, it becomes a bit more difficult. Having 2 days off, it really allows you to put stuff in there, allows you to walk through stuff easily because you're going to have a practice day in there somewhere and then shoot around. So you have an extra session to talk to your guys and work through things. And this is going to be an advantage for both teams. Like both teams are, this is, I'm actually happy that we're going to have such a big game and both teams got 2 days off beforehand, because this is going to be a really interesting one. And this does have a chance to be a finals possibility.
With that time off, does it make this game matter more in the sense to like project forward what you might see? I know it's just one game, but there's so much prep that goes into the game. It gives you more of an idea of what the team might look like with that prep time, that focus on one opponent come playoff time.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have more of that stuff. You're just, it's important. Like, this is a big game for both teams.
Huge.
Like, honestly, this is a measuring stick game for both of them. You know, it's a streak's going to end. Both teams are eyeing each other as the one seed. Both teams are fighting for the top seed in the NBA. To, you know, let's assume both of them make it to the finals. This is fight for home court advantage. This is a big game in terms of what you're looking for. So the intensity is going to be there. It's going to be there for the players. Listen, the Cleveland guys just saw what they did to Boston. They're well aware, you know, and you know, OKC's, they're not sleeping on Cleveland. You know, their understanding of what's, hey, this is one of the best offensive teams in the NBA. Like, they're well aware of the challenge ahead of them. This is a fun one. This is a good measuring stick game as well for both teams to kind of see where they measure up with a team that they're not going to get to see that often.
I'm excited, Mo. We got a lot of big games this week. Like I said, Celtics, Nuggets on Tuesday, Cavs, Thunder on Wednesday. Some banger performances coming this week. It's going to be Monday was a great night in the NBA. A lot of fun games on Monday night.
I just need to say, every night's been amazing. Even on the nights where I think like, oh, meh, kind of night. Like, I'm not excited by some of these games. Next, you know, I turn it on, go like, holy crap, this thing was amazing. Like, you kind of just get blown away. Like, this has been an unbelievable stretch of the season for the NBA. Like, the first half of this season, I've been blown away by the games we've gotten. Like, we've had some nights where it's just absolutely phenomenal performances, games. Like, I love it. This is what I love. Like, this has been exciting.
Basketball's fun, Mo. Tonight was fun with
isn't
you.
It?
Thanks
isn't
for coming it? On, man.
Thank you for having me, bud.
Thanks again to Mo DeHeel for joining the Kevin O'Connor Show tonight. Please give us a 5-star rating and a thumbs up if you're listening to the show on YouTube. It really does help out. Please subscribe as well. Thanks to Stone for producing. Hope you have a good rest of your week, everybody. We'll be back again on Friday.